Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kendall Roden, Cynthia Krang, Kale Teeter, Evan Vasilik, Russell Young, and Sajid DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please visit our website at azpodcast.com.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 275, being recorded on the 17th of April, 2019, with special guest Derek Martin. I'm Sajid, and on Teams with me, I have Cynthia, Evan, and of course, our special guest, Derek, who we're going to get to in just a minute. But before that, let's talk about the very few updates that we have in the Azure space this week. I guess everyone's keeping it close to the vest with Build coming up. What do we have out there? Evan, Cynthia, you said you had some stuff you wanted to talk about.
Yes, Evan said it didn't count because I didn't put it on the show, but
it counts for me. Yeah, you said it, so it counts.
So you can now use AZ Copy to copy data from AWS onto Azure Blob Storage. And before, you actually had to install an agent between to be able to facilitate that transfer, but right now you can do it directly with AZ Copy, and what that means is it's a lot easier to migrate data from one place to another, and hopefully it's from AWS to Azure.
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool to see AZ Copy kind of expanding to a more generic tool from that sense. I mean, I get it. We are trying to do what you're talking about. We'd love to see bring your data from AWS, but I mean, you know, it's just...
It's AZ Copy, right? Not AWS AZ Copy. How can they call it? How can they add that to AZ Copy?
I think it's only one direction. That's why it's so AZ.
Okay. So we'll be... Yeah, okay. So, yeah, okay. Maybe the name still gets to stick for a while then.
Yeah. Fair enough. Okay, that's a good one. Anything else in there?
And then I think there are some new updates. There's a new bot. The bot from V4 is out. I think last time I was still following it. And now there's you can use SharePoint as the knowledge base for the Q&A maker as well.
That's so nice. That's handy. Yeah, very nice. Excellent.
Yep.
Yeah. So I wanted to
get on the steel.
Kale's I'm gonna channel Kale today. So this was, I'll have to give credit to NPR because I heard this on NPR, and it might have been on Marketplace, but apparently, so Cleveland, Ohio, here in the States, is trying to make a name for itself in blockchain. So they had a conference, Blockland Cleveland, and on top of that, you can pay your, it must be local city, city or county taxes, but you can apparently pay them with Bitcoin, which we know is not the same as blockchain, but they're trying to do that because they're trying to drive a culture of leveraging using blockchain in that community, right? Trying to bring in a lot of the companies and innovators in that space and kind of convince them to come into that world. So I just thought it was really neat to see, government entity, which is, they're generally not known for being on the leading edge, really kind of jump into something like blockchain, right? So that means one of two things. Either they are acting, very abnormal for a government entity, or blockchain is no longer cool anymore, right? It's just status quo. So Kale's going to have to accept that.
Kale heard that, so he can have a good rebuttal to that.
That's why I bring it up when he's not here.
But how does the government deal with the fluctuation of Bitcoin value, because it's different every day? And
yeah, I think they turn around. I think what they were saying is they turn around and basically sell it, right? They go back to a marketplace and sell it with a third party. But really, that's kind of the smallest piece, right? The bigger part is they're really trying to bring in blockchain innovators into the region, because mm-hmm. like anything else, right? There's a skill set. Which Kale has, I do not. I'll give him credit for that. around using these different technologies, right? And so by having this, trying to drive this local regional thing right now. They get a bunch of experts that grows on itself. They get more experts, right? It, you know, maybe in a couple of more years, we'll see, you know, we'll see the, you know, Cleveland, Ohio as the, you know, blockchain capital
of, yeah.
Kale will pick up and move, you know, out to Cleveland. That's when we'll know it's really happened.
Well, and to your point, Cynthia, about dealing with the fluctuations, there are now what are called stable coins out there. So these are going to be Bitcoin or they're tokens that you can buy that are pegged to the U.S. dollar. And so it allows you to be on the blockchain technology stack, but not have to worry about the fluctuations nearly as much as you would with like Ethereum or Bitcoin or something.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to look it up.
Awesome. Well, with that, thanks, Evan. Anything else, Evan?
No, that's my news for the week. I've been holding that for like 2 weeks now.
All right. Well, I'm glad special guest Derek chimed in over there, which will give us a chance to let him introduce himself and let us know what he's up to these days in Microsoft and what he does in the Azure space. Go ahead, Derek.
Yeah, well, sure. Thanks for having me on the program today. Kale and I go way back with blockchain stuff, so I thought I better defend his honor there for a few minutes and jump in there. I'm a senior TSP in Azure infrastructure, so I cover networking, security, governance, the IaaS components mostly, and how to secure the PaaS stuff for mid-market size companies in the South Central portion of the United States, and have been working with companies all over the country on what are our best practices, or what we now call better practices or good practices, since we're changing the lingo around to not just say the word best, because there's certainly a lot of different, there's a lot of different ways you can do Azure. And so we want to make sure that we provide customers with good sound guidance and also be a little more opinionated than just, well, it just depends, because there are right and wrong ways of doing certain things in Azure. If we want to call those out.
That's cool. And can you, for the sake of our audience, can you explain what a TSP is?
Sure. So a technology solutions principal is just basically somebody that helps our customers after they buy Azure. How do we help them consume it correctly? We want to make sure that they get all of the bang for their buck, and then also provide them with guidance around architectural patterns, provide them guidance around where they can save money, because we strongly believe in ethical consumption. In fact, I think we all just had to do a training class on ethical consumption, and making sure that our customers are getting great value out of the cloud.
Okay, so you mentioned some of the technology areas that you focused on, which in your mind, you know, which would be, let's say, the number one service or area in Azure that you have to work with, that you see customers used often enough, and then we can go into, you know, some of your observations and your recommended practices in those areas.
Yeah, so at the end of the day, none of our whiz-bang, awesome, amazing features in Azure will work if the network and the security don't work. And while I'm biased, because those are the things I know a lot about, I strongly believe that networking and security have to be at the forefront of everything that we do. And to the extent that if you take a look at our networking team's features, I call them the networking primitives, I am so, so proud of the capabilities that we provide to our customers that you can't get in any other cloud. And so it allows our customers to really come to Azure with the things that they already know around routing, around configuring traffic shaping and different things like that are simply not possible in competing clouds. So short answer is networking. Longer answer is all that other stuff I just said.
So what are some of the building blocks that you should, you know, you would say that customers should start with when they embark on this? Like, what's the lowest level they should say, okay, let's look at this first, you know? I know networking is a broad topic, right?
It is. I have this little program in my brain called Azure Foundations, and I do talks on foundational elements. And the very first thing that you need to talk about is, why are you going to the cloud? It's not necessarily a technical question, and certainly it should not be a technical answer. Now, there are technical nuances to that. You know, our data center is on fire, or our data center is flooding. And so we start with the why are you going to the cloud, and then what are you going to do when you get there? Are you looking to exit data center space? Are you looking to add, you know, burst capacity? Are you looking at just providing a hybrid, you know, more agile foundation for your shared services? And so when I work with customers at the very beginning, we ask those a lot of why questions. And then we get down into the brass tacks of governance and what types of subscription models should you do, and how many topologies do you need for Azure Active Directory, and, oh, you have a third-party IDP, and let's start bringing that together. And ultimately, what we want to do is minimize the number of different tools that a customer needs in order to be successful.
Okay.
Derek, I know the other thing you meant.
Go ahead, Cynthia.
The other thing you were mentioning is about security, and that's definitely one of the biggest things that I've been hearing from all my customers, that cloud is such an unknown space still to a lot of people. How do we give them a Saturday morning English version of how do we implement security on Azure when we no longer have physical control over our own data centers?
Yeah, that anxiety that the networking and security teams come into our initial meetings is palpable. Like, you can actually see it on their face. Like, they do not want to be in the room, because so many organizations for 20 years or more, the bread and butter of securing their network is literally to simply record everything. And that doesn't really apply in the cloud. It can if you're doing any, you know, just IaaS. But when you start getting into PaaS, yes, we can shape traffic in a way that routes things through network virtual appliances, your Palo Altos or your FortiGates, or even with our new features inside of like Azure Firewall. But at the same time, the Saturday, like you said, the Saturday morning, you know, how do we get out there and start working with it, is you really have to remove that anxiety. You have to work with customers to make sure that they understand, A, we've got your back. We're by far the most well-attested platform from a security standpoint in the world. We are providing an inordinate number of capabilities for making sure that your infrastructure is secure by default, but then also being able to control and maintain that secure infrastructure and keep things from drifting off of your baseline. And then I'd say the last little bit of it is being opinionated about what we believe is the right thing to do. Like, we've seen all of our customers do good things and great things and then not so good things and really bad things. It's okay for us to stand up and say, you know what, we get what you're trying to say. Have empathy towards the client and what they're trying to accomplish. But then say, this is how we, it's an overused term, but cloud native can be used to increase your security posture as opposed to decrease it, just, you know, beyond I no longer can see the hardware.
It's interesting you make that statement, because I've had the conversation many, many times with customers. Heck, my old company I used to work for years ago, right? We had our data center, right? It was actually on premises. It was sitting in the office that we were, but it was a locked room and only, you know, a subset of team members could get in there unless you asked somebody to let you in, or unless you had to go talk to somebody who was in there. Like, it versus like, I can't get onto the Microsoft inside the Microsoft data center. today. Like,
right.
I can't. I mean, there's special tours you can go on, but like, I cannot walk on there and talk my way in. And
we have so a lot of requests. They're like, we want to audit your data centers. And we're like, okay, sure. No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I think your meta point, right, is like the fear is totally valid or the concern is totally valid. But some of that is an education thing about what's different, right? And some of it is an education, not just in what's different about cloud, but, you know, what's the reality about what you think you have, right?
Right.
In the on-premises world or in the traditional sense, right? Like, there's assumptions there, but those assumptions may or may not be true.
Yeah, they may not be true even, you know, they may not be true in the cloud, but they may not even be true to what you should be doing on-prem right. anymore. It's a lot of legacy, we'll call it technical debt, to be nice.
Yep.
And people get into a mode of, well, if we record all the traffic, surely we'll find the bad guy. And that doesn't really work. That's like trying to find a needle in a stack of needles.
No, I like the term technical debt that you use. So, you know, if somebody is moving from on-prem to the cloud, what is some of the give me some examples of some of the technical debt baggage that they should let go of at the door, you know, before going there?
Well, I would start there with what I was saying is that recording all traffic is not the answer to every question. And so while we do allow that for most of our SKUs in Azure, we can shape the traffic in ways that other clouds can't. And you can move things over to your NVAs before they egress and bring your Palos even. I'm pretty pragmatic about those kinds of things. In fact, if you're in a company and the security team is adamantly a Palo Alto shop, bring your Palo Alto to Azure. We're great partners with them. But we do need you to start letting go of the fact that recording all traffic is the best approach because we have better tools that allow us to identify emerging threats, things like Azure Sentinel, which you know now we're a SIEM system, things like the machine learning and AI stuff that we apply to Azure Security Center. When I show Azure Security Center to my customers, they come at it with a healthy dose of skepticism because there's always whiz-bang promises by any vendor of, oh, we're going to protect your entire data estate. But then I start showing them, oh, by the way, if your VM's blue screen of death or kernel panic, we're going to analyze that and tell you if that was due to, you know, a driver issue, no big deal. Or have you been breached and somebody's trying to elevate their privileges? That kind of stuff really starts to open their eyes. And then we can also bring in that machine learning and say, all of our other customers are getting hit with this. You might want to, you know, take a peek. We're seeing similar patterns inside your organization as well. And we do all of that security stuff with a foundation of security ourselves. Microsoft is not looking at that data in a way that would compromise your own security, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does. I mean, and where do you stand on the, you know, on the whole NSGs and whatever, all the network security settings that you could apply? Do you have any kind of recommendations or best practices around that?
Yeah, anytime you can leverage native Azure primitives, particularly on the networking side, and there's more to this conversation than just the networking, but to your question, anytime you can use a native Azure primitive, you're going to have a better experience, not the least of which is because it's one less cog in the wheel to break. But the second piece is that if you take away NSGs and just do all of your routing by way of gateways and tunneling and yada, yada, yada through your Palo Altos or your FortiGates, which again are great tools, but if you do all of those things, then you remove a lot of automation capabilities. Now, some of these marketplace NVAs now report their status into Azure Security Center, so you can fire alerts to help with certain things. But when you get down into the automation of, I'm deploying a new application, that application's deployment should include all of the things that go into, it's not just the data, it's not just the website, it's the network security groups, it's the service principles, it's the key vaults. All of those things need to be packaged together so that you have a repeatable process. without using those native Azure primitives, you're adding additional complexity that is not necessary in a, again, I used the overloaded term, a cloud native approach.
Yeah, we've talked about this, and I think his name escapes me, the gentleman that we had on a couple, 3 weeks ago, where we were talking about anti-patterns, right? Mm-hmm. And this feels, Derek, kind of what you're saying is very similar in the sense of, if you can get 80% of the functionality you need out of a cloud native thing, Azure Firewall, NSGs, mm-hmm. whatever, right? Is there something, some cool thing that Palo, you know, Alto or, you know, or Checkpoint, I mean, they're great products. They have tons mm-hmm. of capabilities, but if you don't need that extra 20%, you're bringing complexity and another cog in that wheel that you may or may not need, right?
It's the typical Microsoft approach is we're trying to solve 80% of the world's problems.
Right.
If you need that last 20%, our engineering teams want to talk to you.
Yeah, exactly. We're happy to have you here, right? Using something else or, yeah, but most people don't.
Yeah, and that's something that I think we should do a better job of, and that's why I have this whole concept of opinionated foundations. It's here's what you can do. Yes, we're a Swiss Army knife, but you need to focus on networking. You need to focus on security. You need to focus on role-based access control. Basic, easy things like, you know, you shouldn't have standing access to the portal in your production subscriptions. That's just silly. Why would you do that? And that usually makes people look at you funny until you explain what you're trying to accomplish with these, you know, fully automated CI/CD pipelines that help you deploy not just your applications, but the infrastructure that runs underneath them.
And so if you kind of take this up, step up a little bit to the next layer, what are some of the things that you look into once you've gotten past the networking and the security aspects of the foundation, so to speak? What's the next layer that you would delve into?
The very next thing that I delve into, and this is near and dear to my heart because of where I'm located physically in the world, is our steadfast rule. Do not take a dependency on a single Azure region. We all know about the South Central outage.
Thanks for bringing up that painful experience, Derek. Thanks.
Hey, it affected 100%
of my customers. Therapy had finally kicked in.
Yep. 100% of my customers were impacted by that, and it was awful. But yes. When I went back to all of my customers and said, what in the world? And they were, you know, what happened? And I explained to them, they're actually the responses to those problems were, oh gosh, yeah, that used to, if that ever happened to us, we'd be down for weeks. And there was some empathy there, but our guidance has always been, don't take a single region dependency. And now it's one of those things like, well, yeah, it's in your guidance, but you weren't really forcing the issue.
We didn't think you meant it. We just thought you kind of mentioned it.
Right. They're like, oh, Microsoft's going to take care of it. When would Microsoft ever have an outage? Well, outages happen. I mean, the thing got struck by lightning a whole bunch of times real quick. So it's one of those things, that next step is don't take a single region dependency. Do not consider yourself to be a cloud production or an in-production cloud without a DR and BC strategy that involves you having the ability to execute a failover without touching the portal. You cannot do the things that need to be done by, you know, what we call break glass, meaning a human has to hit a button. These things need to maybe start off automated and then stop right before you cut over so that you can then say, you could say proceed, yes, fail over. But the when customers take a single region dependency and just rely on us, there's that shared responsibility there. And you really don't want to go into the cloud that way.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, I do agree that making sure your application can fail over, kind of more or less seamlessly, right? I mean, I do have reservations about making it fully automated because that can lead to a lot of
false
negatives kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, false negatives. But at the same time, if you've done all of the other things that we tell you to do, you know, no customer is ever going to do all of them, a fail out of a region should be a relatively non-event. Now, that's, nice, shiny, beautiful, you know, happy thinking. Certainly failing out of a region is going to be a painful experience, and there's potential for data loss and things like that. But my point is that if you show them that this is, you know, we mean business, then if you come close to that, then you're far better than saying, oh, well, we can't fail over unless the portal's up, or we can't fail over if we can't authenticate into the CLI, or we can't fail over because we didn't plan for failover. There's no network set up there for us. That is just terrible. Don't do that.
Yeah, I understand. So you don't want to have a dependency on something else in Azure just to fail over.
Right.
You go ahead, Cynthia.
Derek, I'm curious about your opinion on what is the new role of the infrastructure team and the security team once a customer decides to move into the cloud?
My opinion has always been that the infrastructure and security team become more important when you move into the cloud, not less. And by that I mean, yeah, we're going to take care of some of the knucklehead stuff, like I need to deploy a VM. That should be at the end of a ServiceNow ticket. Like, somebody approves it, you get a cost center. No human has to deploy a VM. That's crazy. What does IT ops do then? They get to do the things that are relevant to the business. Things like making sure that you're optimized for spend, making sure that you have additional automation tools to enable some of our more advanced SKUs like Data Factory and stuff. From the security team, we're moving their cheese. Now, instead of recording everything, we're basically bringing in a new set of eyeballs. Those eyeballs are our machine learning algorithms that say, hey, I don't know if you may notice this. This could be a false positive, but we're seeing, you know, an elevation of code privilege on your container clusters and yada, yada, yada. Maybe you should look into that. And so it allows these two groups to be more proactive as opposed to reactive. And the other thing that the cloud is going to do is it's going to make them the heroes. Now, instead of waiting 6 days, or back when I got started in IT, it was literally 3 months to get a virtual machine. Now it's at the end of a ServiceNow ticket. It's approved. Here's your account. Those types of things really make IT ops and security, like I said, even more important in an organization.
What about the other side of this, which is more on the compliance things, right? You didn't mention compliance. So is that something you recommend people take a look at right up front or after they've got their applications up and running and kind of retrofit it?
Well, it's definitely something that you want to do up front, particularly if you're in a regulated industry. And I don't know of many industries anymore that aren't regulated to some degree. What I challenge organizations, though, with is on-premise or old-school interpretations of their security posture in the compliance space. I'll just give you a great example. We have companies that need to be ISO 27001 compliant. Well, what does that mean? It's all up to the interpretation of the document to say what, you know, buttons are you actually pushing? What framework pieces are you paying attention to? PCI and HIPAA are also compliance things. Now, Azure is going to help you with these things. In Azure Security Center, you can like turn on a feature that says, am I ISO 27001 compliant? Well, the answer to that question is, well, we can't tell you that, but here are all of the things that we observe that based on our experience might make you want to address before you bring the auditors in. And so, the short answer to your question is you absolutely need to think about it up front, but you need to come into it with an open mind because it is not the same as the way things were done 10 years ago or even 5 years ago. And your interpretation, while valid for your company, may be a lot more onerous than is actually necessary. Maybe not. But if your interpretation is, in order for me to be HIPAA compliant, I must record all traffic, that's not accurate. It's not that it's a bad approach, but it's not necessary. And there are better ways of achieving your compliance and your attestations by leveraging the tools that we have to help you out along the way.
Right. I know that my customers have a lot of PCI compliance requirements. Mm-hmm. And I know when Microsoft puts up a service, they'll say, okay, maybe something like AKS, for example, is, you know, certified as PCI compliant. However, when you put your application on top of it, that may break the PCI compliance, right? Because the app may do some really stupid things. So that's hence my comment earlier about, you know, do you wait until the app comes on?
No, you have to take a look at it from the infrastructure itself. Certainly, our infrastructure is going to carry a lot of attestation behind it. And so we're getting you, you know, that 80% thing. We're going to get you 80% there. Now, if you go do something really dumb, well, obviously, you're not compliant. So we want to help you get 80% there, but then we also are offering all of these tools, like I mentioned, Azure Security Center, Azure Monitor, Azure Advisor, all of these tools that help you keep yourself on the straight and narrow in a compliant sort of way.
Okay, great. So what are your other set of best practices you feel customers just have to have or have to do before they can say, you know, we're ready to turn on the switch here?
We have a lot of customers that will put, they're excited to use Azure Web Apps as an example. And it's so easy to deploy a web app and you go in and drop in a custom domain name on a web app and poof, you're up in production. You can do that. My advice to customers is you should never expose a web app just sitting out there on the internet. You need a web app firewall. The funny joke that I like to tell is 110% of all previous security breaches have occurred because of SQL injection. Well, Azure Web Apps is not going to protect you against SQL injection attacks. It's going to run your code very, very well. And it's going to do exactly what you tell it to do. You need to have a WAF in front of those things. And so we have things like Azure Front Door. We have things like App Gateway. And the new V2 SKUs in App Gateway are much more robust and powerful. And so that's the first bit. The second bit is never, ever, ever expose a port inside your VNet to the open internet without DDoS standard turned on. Yes, you're going to get basic DDoS protection by just being on Azure, and that will help. But if you open up a port into a VNet that doesn't have DDoS standard in front of it and or an API layer in front of that, like APIM, you are asking for a breach. You're asking for trouble. Those are SKUs that they are expensive. And so some people say, well, we don't need that because we're going to do something else. Those things pay for themselves within hours sometimes of you opening up that kind of traffic to the public internet. It makes the security guys scared because they're like, well, if we just force tunnel everything through our Palo Altos, it would take care of that. Well, yes, but a DDoS attack can still knock over your Palo Altos. And then you may be safe, but you're down. So those are the things that I really, really get opinionated on with regard to web-based traffic is make sure there's a WAF in front of everything. If you don't want to use our WAF, bring your own. If you want to use an F5, bring an F5. That's fine. But make sure that you have things in front of our native or our primitives, our PaaS primitives.
Yep, I think that definitely makes sense. So I know
we lost our crowd.
You know, some of them had to drop off, but we're here. So you know, we've covered a lot of the your best practices. Before we leave, is there anything else that you would like to share?
I'd probably say that while I have kind of adopted this opinionated, you know, this is really the way I think customers should do it, there are always different approaches. There are certainly, as your previous guests have talked about, anti-patterns. I think that the key thing for the folks in my role and the key thing that I would say to our customers is we want to come to you and be a partner with you. We need to have empathy towards where you're coming from. If we can get that figured out, then there should be nothing that we can't do and build together that is going to be secure and performant in your hybrid or cloud native world. So I'd probably say that and then I'll hush up.
Nope, that's sound advice indeed. And you know, I appreciate. I know you have a lot of experience in these areas, and you had shared some links as well about some of the work that you've done. And we'll make that available to our listeners for their consumption. There, thank you very much, Derek, for joining us today and sharing your insights in this area. And we look forward to having you on the show again in the future.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.